Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. One of the things that lies closest to our hearts, whether you're in the heart of Indian country or somewhere else, is our children. And their safety is something that I think every community, every family member takes very seriously. Today's show, we're going to pay special attention to that subject, and we have two expert guests to help us in our discussion. One is a police chief by the name of Lynn Wolford. Lynn, it's great to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you.
And then we've also got Jenny Brooks. Jenny, glad to have you as well.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So we're going to start with you, Chief. You've got a lot of responsibilities. You're based in the town of Ashland, Missouri. And for those of our listeners like me who are familiar with other parts of the country but not Missouri, give us a little perspective on where Ashland actually is.
That's pretty simple, so thanks for asking that. We're right in the middle of the state of Missouri, so halfway between Kansas City and St. Louis, and just a little bit south of Columbia, which is probably smack in the middle of the state. We're about 15 miles south of them, so we just refer to us as Central Missouri.
Oh, okay, very good. And you've got a lot of responsibilities there. In addition to being the police chief, you wear a number of other hats. Tell us a little bit about your roles there in Ashland.
Absolutely. I was hired in 2013 as the police chief here. And I held that role for 2 years. And then in 2015, there was an opening for city administrator, which is basically a city manager who manages all the departments of the city on a daily basis. And then, of course, I answer to the mayor as the city administrator and the board of aldermen, which is the governing body for the city.
Mm-hmm.
So the mayor approached me in 2015 and said, would I be interested in a dual role as the police chief and the city administrator? Well, I'd never been a city administrator before, but actually I hadn't been a police chief before either. So I thought I would be interested. It's just another managerial position. And so I was given that title on an interim basis for 6 months. And then April of 2016, the position was made permanent. I was assigned as a permanent selection for that. So I manage the city on a daily basis, which includes the police department, but then I also focus or function as the police chief in the community.
Mm-hmm. So give us a feel for the size of Ashland. How large a community is it?
Yes, I'd love to tell you that. I moved to the Ashland area in 2001, and if I recall the census sign, when you come into the city, back then it was 1,600.
Okay.
And again, that was in 2001. The city is now at least a population of 5,000. We won't know for sure, of course, until the census in 2020.
Wow.
But we look at our utility billing and multiply that by three using the assumption that that's probably a good average for each household.
Uh-huh.
And that takes us over 5,000. So we think we're a city of 5,000.
Okay. So basically, as we're having this discussion, a lot of folks throughout Indian country, if they're in a moderate-sized tribal community, they're involved with tribal law enforcement or tribal administration, they're going to have a lot of things in common with you, would be my guess. But before we talk more about your various roles, Lynn, and maybe this will actually introduce us to some more of them, we want to talk some with Jenny Brooks. Jenny, you're with an organization called Safe Kids Worldwide. I'll be honest with you, I had not heard of Safe Kids before, so help educate us all about your organization first.
So Safe Kids Worldwide is housed in Washington, D.C., and we have coalitions nationwide. I happen to be in Columbia, Missouri, which is just north of Ashland, and I serve multiple counties. So what we do and we focus on is pediatric injury prevention, keeping kids safe. So it goes from everything from pedestrian safety, which we're talking about today, to every aspect of safety that you can think of and preventable injury. We talk about water safety, pedestrian safety, bicycle safety, medication safety, every aspect of safety. So we educate children and parents about how to keep themselves safe and also for the parents how to keep their children safe.
So Safe Kids Worldwide, as we're learning about it together today, Jenny, is this something that would be funded by various grants? Is it a government organization, a nonprofit? I mean, how is it structured?
So it is funded by grants and usually private business grants. They are a nonprofit and they're coalition-based. So I work out of the University Women's and Children's Hospital in Columbia, but they are the lead agency for me. That's where my office is housed. And then we have a coalition, and I serve the six counties. So basically kind of replicate that all over the United States, and each of us try to have an initiative in our counties to push the message of safety for the family.
So we've got Chief Lynn Wolford with us. You, Jenny, are representing, you know, Safe Kids Worldwide. How did the two of you guys get connected?
So,
I'll speak to that a little bit. Actually, through a program we have here called Walking School Bus, and this is just parents walking the kids to school during the fall and the spring. And I would see Jenny participate in that as they would come to the intersection where I would be directing traffic and helping pedestrians. So, and of course, Jenny being a mom, she takes her kids to school. And so when the walking school bus is not functioning because it's too cold or bad weather, then I would see her pass through the intersection bringing her kids to school.
Wow. So let me see if I'm, you know, appreciating all this. So, Lynn, in addition to being a police chief and a city administrator, you're also a crossing guard. Am I hearing that right?
You are, absolutely. And that's actually a dual role because with the intersection where I assist pedestrians is a terrible congestion problem if I'm not there to direct the traffic. So it's an intersection of two streets. They're just two-lane streets with way too much traffic coming to school with everybody dropping their kids. So I function as the vehicle controller and pedestrian safety, I guess we could say it that way.
Very, very interesting. Now, you're talking about this walking school bus. I want to hear from a mom. So, Jenny, we're coming back to you on this one. I mean, it sounds like a great idea, you know, where kids are walking as a group with their parents to school. But is it more just something that's a concept in reality? It's, you know, just you walking with your kids or really whole groups of kids actually walking all together to school?
No, it really is whole groups of kids walking together to school. We have three locations, and I'm speaking not as my Safe Kids coordinator role now, more as like my volunteer assistant leader walking school bus. There's three locations, and I would say we average 50 kids or more each time.
Really?
That we do it. We do it three times per year, and we usually do it for a month at a time during the better times of the year. So we do it in the spring, and we do it in the summer for summer school, and we do it also in the fall. And we walk children to both the primary and the elementary schools.
I mean, that is great. That's great.
And they are right here at this intersection where Chief Wolford is the crossing guard. He's directing traffic and crossing the kids as well.
Now, Jenny, I think all this comes full circle as we talk about your relationship because Safe Kids Worldwide actually does something. Is it on an annual basis to honor crossing guards? Do I understand that correctly?
Yes, and I've only been a coordinator for just a little bit over a year, and I saw this come out, and because of doing the walking school bus, I thought this would be a great opportunity because I see Chief Wolford every single day you know, I didn't want it to be like a conflict of interest or anything. And I double checked to make sure, because I put the information out for anyone who wanted to nominate. And I asked my supervisor too, and I asked if I could nominate him, and I nominated him for America's favorite crossing guard.
Okay, so is this is really a legitimate national event where they take nominees from throughout the country, and who's going to be America's favorite crossing guard for this year? Is this a real deal?
Yes, I believe there were over 170 entries, and Chief might know better. There was hundreds of thousands of votes.
So. Really? This is amazing. And so, Chief, you were selected for what year as the world or the country's favorite crossing guard? I know I don't have the terminology quite right.
Well, that's fine. You're getting the word across. Very good. I have been selected as the 2019 winner of America's favorite crossing guard. And just to embellish a little bit on the program, there were 31 states were involved in the nominations of 170.
Wow. Well, congratulations. And we're privileged to have America's favorite crossing guard on our program.
I tell you, it's very humbling. Just the support that we got from that I got from the community to get this done. Because there's a voting process, and then once the top five vote getters are determined, there's a background check. Luckily, I passed it. That's the push chief. And then each of us have to submit in writing just why we should be selected as America's favorite. So even though you may get a lot of votes, that is not the sole determining factor. So in my case, everything went well. I got the most votes, and evidently I was eloquent enough in my writing to get the five judges to agree that, yeah, we should probably pick him as number one.
Well, at least they didn't make you go to Washington, D.C. and help kids cross some of those circles there. It seems like it can get kind of crazy in the nation's capital.
You know, I've never been there, which is that's one of those bucket list things. But, yeah, that would be quite the challenge.
Okay. So what we want to do basically is draw from the experience of both of you on today's show. We want to talk about children's safety in general. We want to especially talk about safety as we're thinking of one of the most dangerous places that often we take for granted. It doesn't matter whether you're on a reservation that seems to not have that much traffic or you're in the heart of an urban area. We're really talking about a dangerous place for kids when it comes to roadways. Jenny, do we have any actual statistics about the danger of kids in proximity to roads?
I have some information that we use for education pieces. That's a lot of what we do.
Uh-huh.
We talk to the children about looking left and right and left again, and we talk to them about crossing at the crosswalk and all of the things that they need to do, walking on the sidewalk, making sure they're walking against traffic, and them understanding that even if a pedestrian has the right of way, it's always going to be a bad outcome if they're not following the rules of the road.
Mm-hmm.
So we try to teach the kids early, if you're less than 10, probably being right there by a parent, maybe not if holding a hand, making sure that you're at least beside them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Close enough to where if there was a car coming that you'd be right there with your parent, not running across the street, not running into the street to get a ball or something, a cherished toy. We do a lot of those things.
This is great. We want to talk a lot more about some of the life lessons that both of you have. We're going to be coming back to you, Chief. We know you got a great perspective, but before we do that, we have to let you who are tuning in today realize that we've got some important messages coming up. And we're going to be back with Chief Lynn Wolford, the police chief and the city administrator for Ashland, Missouri, also named America's favorite crossing guard for 2019, as well as Jenny Brooks with Safe Kids Worldwide, helping with the coalition there in Columbia, Missouri. A lot more practical information coming up on today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Don't go away. More right after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
This is Betty White. I know you don't need one more thing to worry about, but listen. High blood pressure can cause kidney damage, blindness, heart attack, stroke. And you can have high blood pressure even if you feel all right. 1 in 7 adults has it, but it's easy to get your blood pressure checked, and you can treat it if it is too high. So don't worry about it. Don't ignore it. Just see your doctor and check it out.
For your free booklet, visit the Will Rogers Institute at wrinstitute.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Emergency medical unit, respond to 102 Maple Avenue, possible stroke victim.
When stroke occurs, you have 60 minutes to win or lose the race of your life. There are new treatments, but you must get to a hospital fast. If you suddenly feel weakness on one side, have trouble speaking, walking, or seeing, it could be a stroke. Call 911. Get to a hospital. Because how you spend the next 60 minutes could determine how you spend the rest of your life. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
If you receive disability benefits, keeping Social Security informed is key. Keeping us informed minimizes the chance that we learn about something later that could negatively affect your benefits. That's the surprise no one wants because it creates overpayments that you must repay, disrupts payments, and can even jeopardize your entitlement to Social Security benefits. Learn more about reporting responsibilities for people working and receiving disability or SSI benefits by reading our online publications, Working While Disabled, How We Can Help, and How Work Affects Your Benefits at www.socialsecurity.gov/pubs. Some changes can be reported online at www.socialsecurity.gov. You can also notify us at 1-800-772-1213 or contact your local Social Security office. Our goal at Social Security is to pay you the right amount on time every month. With your cooperation to keep us informed of changes, the likelihood of any unpleasant surprises that could derail your benefits will be greatly minimized.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. Dr. David DeRose, we're talking about child safety, whether it's crossing streets, whether it's in other places, whether you're on a reservation, whether you're in an urban area, whether you have had someone in your family, a close friend, a close contact, who has suffered an injury as a pedestrian or not, it's an important topic. Chief and Jenny, as we lead into this segment, I'm just thinking about a patient I saw not all that long ago in the office. And as he was telling me his story, he was a pedestrian hit by a vehicle and is having long-term complications as a result of that accident. It's so common. You don't have much defense when you're on your feet or even on a bicycle and someone hits you in a, you know, several thousand pound vehicle. Chief, what kind of messaging are you giving as you're interacting with kids as America's favorite crossing guard?
I function with the kids more as an educator is what I try to do. When they're crossing the street, the importance of being within the crosswalk. And it's a challenge for certain age groups, but to try and explain the importance of just don't walk out into the street. You know, kids get distracted, especially if there's two or more. You mm-hmm. know, they're with each other, and they're focused on what they're doing. And I have seen on occasion where the kids will just walk right from the sidewalk right into the street, didn't look. They're in the crosswalk, but, you know, traffic is moving and it's somewhat scary. And, of course, even along the sidewalk are driveways. And sometimes little people are hard to see, you know, if you're in a tall vehicle or just your focus is redirected. And I'll say that to pinpoint cell phones, of course, but I'm seeing a lot of teens at this point who are using headphones, and their focus is totally on whatever's going through the headphones. They're walking walking with their head down. They're listening, they're texting, whatever activity they're involved in, and not really aware of their surroundings or even their location. And I've had occasion where some of the high schoolers or middle school kids will walk home, and so they end up at my intersection and have just rolled out into the street like it's just part of the sidewalk.
Hmm.
It's an extension, of course, of the sidewalk, but it certainly is a dangerous extension, and it requires attention. And so I try to act as an educator to define the difference between the crosswalk and the sidewalk and the safety zone, but it takes the effort of everybody, the drivers, the walkers. Everybody has to play their part because, as you said, we're talking about a 2,000-pound vehicle, minimum probably at this point, against, 100 pounds or 200 pounds of human.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very fair fight.
Now, the interesting thing about this show is, as we're talking together, a lot of people who are tuning in are saying, well, I mean, this is all pretty obvious. I mean, why are they talking about crossing streets? I mean, we learned that when we were kids. But part of the problem is, even though we think this is just common sense, Jenny, my sense is that this is another one of those examples where common sense isn't all that common. Is that true from what you've seen?
Yeah, that is correct. And just going back to what we've spoke about previously, actually pedestrian injuries are the fifth leading cause of injury-related death for children ages 5 to 19. So it is a big concern. In 2017, the Governor's Highway Safety Association came out with a statistic about texting and walking as well, something to refer to what Chief Wolford just said. And over 6,000 people had unfortunately lost their lives. Now, that's not just children. That's adults and children. But it's just something to think about. Common sense is something that people think that it's something that, you know, automatically people should know, that before you walk across the street, you should look. But it doesn't always happen, especially, like he said, when they have earbuds in or they're looking at their phones or they're distracted with their friends, their horse playing, video games, handheld, any type of handheld device can cause these problems.
Am I hearing this right, that it's 6,000 people died in 1 year from...
Yeah, that is. If you look up the Governor's Highway Safety Association statistic, it is out there. So it is it's an issue for adults and children, but it is the fifth leading pedestrian is the last fifth leading cause of injury related death.
Wow. So we're talking. So we're talking about something that's really important. I mean, some of these statistics. I mean, people say, oh, it's a big country. I mean, 6,000 people. I mean, yeah, it sounds like a big number. But if we had, I mean, how many people fit in one of those, big planes that we fly? What, 150, 200 people? Yeah, we're talking like 30 planes crashing in a year. I mean, you think people would be talking about it?
And it's more than the number of people in Ashland.
Oh, it's more than the people in Ashland. Yeah, that's another way to put it. Yeah, so this is huge stuff. And okay, so a lot of this is sounding like common sense, but the reality is, if you tell kids they shouldn't be wearing the earbuds when they're walking around, do you find that message connects, Chief? I mean, do you tell kids, hey, when you're crossing here, it's really busy, you know, you shouldn't have... do you give them messages like that, or have you decided it's kind of futile?
Well, I don't think it's futile, but it's not a one-time thing. It takes reminders until it becomes maybe habit. Because I think we all have done this just as a driving experience. We are distracted. We become refocused, and then we try to remember where we've been, what occurred while I was distracted, and you just draw a blank, and it's like, well, I'm glad nothing happened, because I don't even remember. And so I think that age group gets focused on whatever they're doing, either with a cell phone or listening to music, and just totally unaware of surroundings, and it takes, education takes repetition. And so it's certainly not a one-time fix. So, and I try to keep that in mind when I see something that looks really dangerous, and not be critical, but be positive and say, hey, let's rethink what just happened here. I think that's more receptive, but it's the repetition of that is the successful part.
So tell us some stories. Jenny, can you think of any... real-life stories that drive home these points, whether it was someone who did something wrong or someone that did something right?
I actually think I've seen one just recently, and it was a younger girl, but she was not paying attention to, not to Chief Wolford, but to a different crossing guard and getting their attention. So that she started out into the street, you know, and she was fine. There was nothing happened. But just that creating that awareness to get the crossing guard's attention if they're looking away from you, because people are used to seeing the crossing guard if you're in the car at that location. So educating the kids that if, you know, everything was fine, but educating them not to start out into the street and until they've made the crossing guard aware that they're there.
Mm-hmm. So. Good point. Chief, how about you? Any real-life illustrations that kind of drive some of these points home?
Well, I can give you something that occurred right here in Ashland. And really, it may not have been the pedestrian's fault as much as just design, and I can tell you how we fixed that. But Ashland, the older part of Ashland, is not sidewalk equipped.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the process of building sidewalks where there haven't been any. And one of the, when you apply for these grants, they say, well, what's going on that you need help in this particular area? Well, and the mayor saw this, I didn't, but on a street that now has a sidewalk but didn't, there was probably a middle school child walking in the street. And, you know, I don't know, the only thing I don't know is what distractions she had, if any, but car came by, and it was too close, and I don't believe she was knocked into the ditch, but I think she jumped into the ditch to get out of the way and broke her arm. Mm. And, that really was a selling point for the mayor and the rest of us that, okay, this is a traveled route at school, used daily, and we don't have any sidewalks and people are in the street, and it's not a good situation. So we made application to the state for a cost share on putting a sidewalk in, and we got that done a couple of years ago, and we're in the process now of doing the same thing on another street that pretty much is 20 feet wide, so 2 10-foot lanes, no sidewalks, and the ditches are steep on both sides of the road. So, but the kids walk that road to get from one campus to another. So we again applied for a grant. In fact, we had a pre-construction meeting this morning, and we hope in the middle of April we'll be able to start this sidewalk project and have it done basically for the next school year, so that we don't be mixing pedestrians with traffic. And that's part of our issue here in our particular town. You know, each city probably has their own challenges, but that's what we're facing here. We're just trying to get pedestrians out of the street and make their passage safe. Now, do we have a lot of incidents? No, but everybody's familiar with the road, and so they're very pedestrian conscious, and we've been lucky. I think that's probably the bottom line, that we haven't seriously hurt anybody. I think a broken arm is serious enough.
No, I appreciate what you're saying, because what I hear you saying, Chief, is so many of the things that we do as far as making things safe are reactive. You know, someone's got to get hurt first, but you guys took that lesson and you said, where else can we ensure safety in our community? On that note, we're going to step away. We've got a lot more to talk about. We're going to transition beyond safe crossings and safe roads to other things that are real concerns when it comes to keeping our children safe. You don't want to miss that as we head into the second half of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Stay tuned. A lot more coming up right after this.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
So, you want to be a hero. Here are some ways to get the job. Hunt down that killer shark. Or run into a burning house to save a kitten. Luckily, there's an easier way to become a hero. Call 911 if you see someone experiencing the symptoms of stroke, sudden weakness on one side, or trouble speaking, walking, or seeing. Stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. You'll be a real hero. A message from the National Institute of Neurological Disorders and Stroke.
Diabetes affects more than 29 million Americans. If left untreated, diabetes can lead to serious health problems such as heart disease, stroke, blindness, and kidney disease. Your family's health history can be an important factor in determining your risk of developing diabetes. The National Diabetes Education Program wants to help you and your family. Do all you can to prevent or delay the onset of type 2 diabetes. Visit yourdiabetesinfo.org to learn more.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
Welcome back to our second half of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. My guests from the top of the hour continue to be with us in our virtual studio. They're, of course, joining me by way of phone. Chief Lynn Wolford, Police Chief and City Administrator for the City of Ashland, Missouri, and Jenny Brooks, representing Safe Kids Worldwide, Jenny being based in Columbia, Missouri. Jenny, we want to begin by talking a little bit with you as we begin this segment, and it has to do with really expanding the dialogue. We've been speaking a lot about kids crossing streets, walking on sidewalks, being safe. But of course, roadway safety, whether it involves pedestrians or other vehicular passengers, also has a huge role when it comes to the driver and occupants in vehicles. You're involved with messaging in that domain as well. What kind of concerns do you have when it comes to someone getting behind the wheel and driving as far as safety?
So with regards to children, you think occupant safety, right, in the vehicle, and you think about where your children need to be and what they need to be in, if they need to be in a car seat and what position that car seat needs to be in, or if they need to be in a booster seat still, and they're not still in a booster seat, or if they really are ready to graduate to a seatbelt. I think those are three really important things to think about, in addition to if they're ready to be riding in the front seat, and if that's appropriate.
This is such a great discussion. A while back on the show, we had someone who actually worked in tribal health, and they were sharing something that, you know, I hadn't really thought about, but a lot of people in tribal communities, especially on a larger reservation, for example, they may have, you know, a police force, law enforcement that is, you know, all tribal. It's not, you know, state police that are you know, watching over the roadways. And what I came to learn is that a lot of tribes don't have the kind of rules about child, you know, passenger restraints and other things that there may be in other settings. And sometimes people might think this is some asset in Indian country that, you know, they don't have to, you know, go along with all these rules. They don't need the car seats or whatever because they're on tribal lands. But this person who's native was saying, you know, how disastrous this was, because these laws have been put into effect not because the government is trying to take away our freedoms. It's based on research, isn't it, Jenny?
It is based on research. Unfortunately, accidents and road injuries are the leading cause of preventable deaths, injuries, and to children in the United States. So, and unfortunately, 71% of vehicles have car seats installed improperly. Probably about 3 out of 4 car seats are installed improperly, because they're not as easy as people think they are.
So what do we do? If I'm a grandparent, a parent, an aunt, an uncle, and I've got some young children, how do I know, first of all, whether they need a car seat, and then how do I know that I can install it properly?
Well, we try to educate pregnant mothers as well. I think it's really important to think from the very beginning and understand where you need to start. With newborns, we have to use rear-facing, and we recommend using a rear-facing car seat installed properly in the car until they are at that maximum height and weight for the rear-facing car seat. There are two different types of rear-facing car seats. There's one that's more of an infant carrier that goes up to maybe possibly 30, 35 pounds, generally speaking. And then there's a convertible car seat that is rear facing from a weight of 5 pounds all the way up to 40 is one of the weights. So you can literally keep your child rear facing in that seat until they're 40 pounds, which is really nice, because rear facing is actually the safest way for children. And then when you convert them to the front facing, they begin to use the front facing with a harness. And a lot of times those convertibles will go with a harness until 65 pounds forward facing.
Okay.
So using that 5-point harness as long as possible and keeping them rear facing as long as possible is going to be the safest route. And then finally transitioning into a booster seat.
So now, Chief, as a police chief and as a, you know, administrator of a you know, small community, by some standards, but by other standards, you know, 5,000 is not, you know, just a intersection that you just fly by. Do you see problems in real life with people either not using appropriate safety seats for their children, or maybe even not using them at all?
It probably hurts to say this, but we do see people of car seat age group and not being used, you know, standing on the seat, just seated next to whomever, whether it be an adult or another child. And most of my officers are parents, and so we take that pretty serious. Mm-hmm. So that, as opposed to in Missouri, a seatbelt is not a primary charge. In other words, you can't stop somebody because they're not wearing their seatbelt. Mm-hmm. However, child restraint is.
Ah.
And my officers take it very serious to see a car seat age child not in a car seat. And so, and I would say 9 times out of 10, there's probably a ticket issue because we think that's just bad choice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I appreciate.
I mean, we need to protect those young people. And as Jenny could probably explain, you know, their bodies are not designed for the type of forces that are experienced in a car crash. And so we take that pretty serious and make those stops and contact the parents, not only as an educational tool, but as a reminder that, you know, that there's, first of all, there's a requirement. Second of all, you're putting the child at risk.
Mm-hmm. You know, important message for those of you tuning in today. If you're a tribal council person, if you're in a tribal community and you know there's not real strict enforcement of regulations or maybe no regulations with child passenger restraints, just a reminder of what we've been talking about on today's show. Don't wait for your child to be the one that metaphorically falls in that ditch and breaks his or her arm. It may be worse than a broken arm. And, you know, get serious about this. If you're learning about it for the first time, that this may be a challenge in tribal communities, look into it. If you don't have children or grandchildren and you haven't been thinking about these issues, because we're really talking, aren't we, Jenny, about something that can be, well, if it's not life-threatening, I mean, it could be talking about impairment for life, right?
Right. I would say, you know, road injuries, like I said before, are the leading cause of preventable death. And then there can also be things like traumatic brain injury and other long-term injuries that can happen in car accidents that could be avoided by using the proper restraint based on age, height, weight. You know, that's really important to think about. And there's a lot of other types of accidents that can happen with regards to seatbelts. If you're not properly fitted in the seatbelt, it can go to your neck, which is, and there's just other things, seatbelt syndrome. I don't want to get into too many injuries, but I mean, those are things that can happen if a child is not fitted properly in a seatbelt.
Now, I know, Chief, you don't speak for police chiefs and law enforcement throughout the country, but if a parent in Ashland, Missouri was listening to this show and, I'm not sure if we have an affiliate that actually, you know, you can pick us up over the airwaves, but you surely could listen on, you know, one of our networks that carry us, like Native Voice One or Life Talk Radio. They stream the show. So let's say someone is listening to this program as it's airing in Ashland, Missouri, and they say, boy, you know, Chief's got me really worried. I don't know if I've got my kid belted right. I don't know if this is the right kind of car seat. I mean, is this something that someone could, you know, walk into the police department or you know, a city building and could ask for help, or, you're going to say, you know, look on YouTube. What do you guys do in a practical way if someone's concerned about this as a parent or a grandparent and doesn't know where to turn?
From a perspective of child passenger safety, to properly educate a person to use a child passenger safety seat or child safety seat, you have to have a child passenger safety technician's license. But obviously, we understand not everybody has those. So just generally speaking, we would always educate them to use the manual of the car seat and also the manual of their car. And there's not every place you can go to actually have a proper installation. You want to try to find a child passenger safety technician.
Hmm. Do you have one of those in Ashland, Chief?
David, I can speak a little bit to that.
Yeah, please.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we do not have that technician with the Ashland City Hall, whether mm-hmm. it be police department or any other department. But it is a conversation piece that we would like to provide because we can offer this service not only to our residents, but anybody that lives in Southern Boone County. Because obviously, our child seat age group is growing. We'll get a lot of younger families moving town or right outside of town. And I think that would be something nice to offer. Now, I think Columbia, and Jenny, you can speak to this. There's places to go there, is there not? The fire department or do you know?
So, yes, I do know. I am one. I am a child passenger safety technician. So I have times that I can schedule appointments with families. And the Columbia Fire Department, which is also in our town, has times that we can schedule appointments with our families. So those are two locations that are in Columbia, which is about 20 minutes away mm-hmm. from Ashland. But there's child passenger safety technicians all over the United States. And there is assert.safekids.org where you can actually look up to find child passenger safety technicians in your area.
Okay, so the website we want to remember is simply safekids.org. Have I got that right?
That's right. And then there is a certification page for child passenger safety, which is CERT, cert.safekids.org. Mm-hmm. And that one you can actually look up child passenger safety technicians related to proper installation of car seats.
Okay.
And find someone in your area.
So let me see if I've got this process straight. I go on the internet to safekids.org. And there's a place where I can search. I can just put CERT, and that's likely to pull this up.
So I would put cert.safekids.org in your search engine.
Okay.
And then you're able to go in and then find a tech. And that's how someone can actually go in and find the technician.
Okay. So just put the letter CERT and then a dot before
safekids.org. And then it'll. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I got it. So, and this is going to work anywhere in the country. Like I'm here in Northern California. So if I put that in, I could find someone in Northern California who is certified?
Yes, and you just click on Find a Tech, mm-hmm. and then it'll take you to a form online, or you can put in your zip code, city, county, state, if you need a different language to see if there's someone that has that language available close to you. So it'll pull up the name of a person that has a technician license in your area.
Great stuff. We have got to step away just again briefly. We're going to be back with one final segment with Chief Lynn Wolford and with Jenny Brooks. If you've got to step away, I'm sorry because you'll miss our last segment. But one more time, if you didn't catch it, that website, safekids.org. We'll talk more about keeping your children safe, whether it's on the reservation, whether in an urban area, wherever it is. A lot of practical messages coming up in our final segment. If you can, stay by. A lot more good stuff to come. I'm Dr. DeRose. We will be right up after this.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
One day, I'll teach chemistry to kids.
I'm going to be an architect.
My dream is to be a chef.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we provide more than $150 billion each year in grants, loans, and work study funds, making higher education possible for anyone at any stage of life.
I can go back to college.
I can change careers.
I can make a difference.
Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more about money for college at studentaid.gov.
Diabetes is a serious disease that runs in families. If your parents or siblings have type 2 diabetes, you have a greater chance of getting the disease. If you're African American, Hispanic, or Latino, American Indian, Alaska Native, Asian American, Native Hawaiian, or Pacific Islander, you also have a higher chance of developing the disease. The National Diabetes Education Program wants to help you understand your risk. Visit the NDEP website at yourdiabetesinfo.org for diabetes prevention tools, including the Family Health History Quiz.
It started off as a normal day. I felt fine when I arrived at the plant.
Ruth Junius's life was about to change.
Then I dropped my keys. They kept slipping out of my hand. My arm felt numb. A coworker asked me if I was okay, and I couldn't speak. I started to get scared.
Ruth was having a stroke. People around her weren't sure what to do.
They thought I should go home or lie down, but I knew something was very wrong. I wrote 911 on a piece of paper with my other hand, and someone called for me.
Because everyone acted quickly, doctors at the hospital were able to give Ruth treatment that started to reverse the symptoms.
Within a few minutes, I was talking again. I didn't know a thing about stroke before I had one. Now I make sure that my friends and family know all the signs of stroke so they'll get help fast if they need it.
No stroke. Know the signs. Act in time. Call 1-800-352-9424 for more information. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, National Institutes of Health.
You're listening to Dr. David DeRose on American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is Dr. DeRose.
You are back with Dr. David DeRose for our final segment of today's edition of American Indian Living. We've been speaking about keeping our children safe. And although we focused a lot on roadways and vehicles, there's other areas of danger in sometimes what we think are the safest places for our kids. One of those places is in the home. Jenny Brooks has been with us from the top of the hour. She represents Safe Kids Worldwide. Jenny, help us understand, around the home, are there special danger areas that parents, grandparents, babysitters need to be aware of?
Yes, for sure. So thinking about, like, in your kitchen or in your bathroom where you keep your medications, that's really an important thought process for parents to think about with their children. Are there medications up and away and out of sight of their children? That's important because they can mistake them for candy. That's mm-hmm. a really big one that we talk about. In the home, also, we talk about furniture tip-overs and TV tip-overs, making mm-hmm. sure things are bracketed to the walls, furniture brackets and TV straps for young children who want to climb because they're usually curious climbers. That's mm-hmm. one of the things we definitely talk about. Making sure things are bracketed and strapped to the walls. We talk about poisoning with household cleaners that look like other things like Gatorade, Windex, similarities there.
Wow, those are things that if you're not a parent or if you don't have, you know, young children around, we often forget about, don't we?
Yes.
So talk with
us. David, that's,
yeah, go ahead,
that's a good point, too, with firearms. You know, it's easy to have one laying around and next to the bed, and that sometimes can be a problem because kids are inquisitive and curious. And you know, it's all too often that we just hear about some kind of tragedy where a young one has found a firearm, and of course it's loaded, and you know, bad things happen. So, along with those household chemicals, I certainly would throw that in there that firearms need to be, you need to be conscious of where they are at all times, and then even make sure, you know, double check that they're where they should be, either locked up or somewhere high where the kids can't get to them.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's, you know, it's so final with firearms if something bad happens.
No, I so appreciate you mentioning this, Chief, because, you know, you often hear this discussion and, you know, everyone says, oh, yeah, there's kids around, you know, lock your guns up, make sure they're not loaded. And then you hear the flip side of it. The very same people that might say that say, well, you know, I sleep with a gun, you know, at my bedside. It's a, you know, dangerous neighborhood. And, you know, if you ask them, well, is the gun in a case? Is it loaded? Oh, of course it's loaded. It's ready. You know, if someone's in, I want to be prepared. I mean, how do you strike that balance when you're speaking, you know, with gun owners? What does that look like if they're being, you know, responsible, yet their concern is trying to be safe?
It's kind of like convincing the teenager to pay attention when you get to the intersection. I think Jenny mentioned this earlier. You think common sense is common. But sometimes we just all get refocused, you know, and we're not as careful as we should be. Always put the gun in a particular place except that one time, you know, and you can't have that one time. It's got to be, the attention has to be on. The firearm needs to be the safest place there is, and it has to be there every time, all times, especially with kids in that.
So here's the big question. So we're talking about these different practices. Now, I didn't grow up in a home where there were firearms, but there were prescription medications around. And it seems that my parents, at some point when I was young, they explained to me, you know, these were not candies. They showed me where the medicines were, et cetera, et cetera. And that brings up this whole debate. Are we better off educating kids about the firearms, the medications, where they are, where they shouldn't go? Or is it better just to keep it under the radar screen? Jenny, what's the best approach?
We always go by the education. Like for small children, obviously, if they're not a certain age, we're not going to have this conversation at this point. And I can't speak necessarily other than what I've learned because I wasn't either brought up in a house. But I think if you're teaching children at a certain age, once you feel like they're, you know, at a mature enough age to understand, I think that it might be. When they're smaller, I mean, curiosity does get the best of children sometimes, and they want to know and they want to be. So when they're small, we a lot of times we'll say, for medication specifically, up and away and out of sight. And I think, you know, with, like we say, unloaded and in a safe, in a way, I think that those are obviously, and Chief would agree with that, good practices, right? So, but if they're a child that's like maybe hunting, because I know we have a lot of hunting in our area, there is a certain point where they have to have an education on it. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts from your perspective, Chief?
I think these are all good points. They just have to be in the front of a person's mind, you know, that the firearms owners, and there's lots of them. It's a concern in general. Is there a lot of, should we call them accidents? No. But like I said before, it can be just so final that it just has to be a priority. If you're going to have a firearm in the house, it has to be somewhere. And children, and even without children, but, you know, most especially with children in the house, that just has to be the main priority, that gun is where it is the most safe.
We've been speaking about a variety of areas that relate to safety, and it seems like before the show closes out, it would be a shame not to come back to a topic that we led the show with, and that is that in addition to being a police chief in Ashland, Missouri, and the city administrator, Lynn Wolford, if you haven't been with us from the very beginning of the show, has been honored for 2019 as being America's favorite crossing guard. Coming back to that, Lynn, I mean, one of the things I know that always comes up with awards, you know, especially it's usually the kids that ask this. They say, well, I mean, what did he get? I mean, did he get a trophy? I mean, you know, sometimes these awards, it's a certificate. Is this a bigger deal than that? Was there something that went along with the recognition?
Absolutely, David. It is a huge deal. I have a new jacket, a new set of gloves, a trophy, but most important, because this was not about me, but most important was the school received a check for $10,000.
Wow.
To improve pedestrian safety. And that was funded, FedEx has partnered with Safe Kids and Safe Kids Worldwide to make this happen. So this is the third year that this America's favorite has been going on, and this year is the most money that's been awarded, and there were three places. So first place got $10,000, second place was $7,500, and third place was $5,000.
Well, that is nice, and it's great to think of FedEx putting up the funds. I mean, they log a lot of miles, and I know they're obviously, by funding this award, they're concerned about the topic of safety. That is just great. So I'm hearing a subtle endorsement. If there's people listening out there, and whether you're in a tribal community or somewhere else, if there's a crossing guard that's making a difference in your community, am I hearing it right, Jenny, that you could nominate anyone, or does there have to be a Safe Kids local coalition that sponsors a crossing guard?
No, I think anyone, they open it to anyone who wants to nominate their crossing guard.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a person besides me, I did the nomination, I happen to be the Safe Kids coordinator, but you don't have to be a Safe Kids coordinator to nominate your crossing guard. It will, and especially in small towns, it provides a nice size reward, mm-hmm. for you to be able to do some safety improvements, and it'll go a longer way, you know, it'll go a long way. So I think it's kind of nice for the city of Ashland to have it because of that reason, and there's lots of other small towns like that all over the United States that would definitely benefit from nominating a crossing guard in the future. And yes, FedEx not only provided those checks, but we also had an international walk the school day back in September, and we actually had some FedEx drivers attend that as well. So they're very involved with the community and pedestrian safety.
Really very, very nice. Well, our time is slipping away, but before we go, Chief, you've been someone who's been honored, and I know you're making a big difference in many respects. Any final messages for those who've been tuning in today?
Well, David, I'll say this, and I know I'm not probably speaking to my own community, but I was very honored, of course, to be selected for this title of America's Favorite, but I was also very humbled by the support of the community and the push that it took for the votes, you know, to get this done. I mean, this is not just me. This is the whole community, mm-hmm. and I'm certainly very appreciative of that.
Well, thank you so much for giving back in so many different ways and actually, you know, reaffirming that community that you're serving. Thank you, Chief, too, for sharing time out of your busy schedule to join us.
Thank you for asking me.
And Jenny, thank you, too. Appreciate what you and Safe Kids Worldwide are doing.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here today.
Again, if you want more information about Safe Kids Worldwide, that's safekids.org. I'm Dr. David DeRose. That's it for today's edition of American Indian Living. And as always, I'm wishing you the very best of health.
This is Life Talk Radio.